Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us this morning. In this first hour of the show, we'll be inviting any questions you might have on prescription medications. Our guest is James Rybacki. He's a pharmacist. He is host and producer of a nationally syndicated television program titled About Your Medicines. He's also a national medical advisor to the American Heart Association PRT Compliance Action Program and is assistant professor at the University of Maryland. He is the co-author of a recently published book that we will be talking about. It's titled The Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs 2001, which, among other things, contains profiles of more than 300 drugs. It has a section with color photographs of the drug, so you can actually see what they look like. It also has information on things like drug interactions, places that people might get into problems because they're taking more than one medicine. It's a good resource for anyone who is interested in finding out more about the medicines that they may be taking or their family members are taking. This morning, we'll be inviting these very sorts of questions. If you have questions about medication, you can give us a call. Dr. Rybacki, I know, will do his best to give you an answer, or other sorts of things that have to do with prescription medications. We would welcome those questions. The number, if you're here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, around Illinois, Indiana, any place the signal will travel. That number is 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Dr. Rybacki, hello.
Well, good morning.
Thanks for talking with us.
Oh, it's good to be here.
Appreciate it. I'm curious, is it possible to put a number on a couple of things? One thing I wonder about is adverse reactions to prescription medication, things that are they're correctly prescribed in the sense that the right drug was given for the right reason, but for some reason that individual just doesn't tolerate it very much, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible to put a number on that?
Some 3 to 20%. Obviously, it varies broadly across patient populations, drug classes. And the challenging thing for me, though, is looking at the reality. There was an FDA report a couple of years ago that said only 3% of serious adverse drug reactions were reported. And the caveat to that is that it's a voluntary system. So when you ask a busy healthcare professional, well, you know, in the course of what you usually do, I'd like you to report adverse drug reactions. Here's how to do it. Here's a form. Is it likely to happen if it's voluntary? No, I don't think so. So they tend to be underreported, and I think that's a prescription for potential disaster.
Yeah, and I think that gets at the second thing that I was wondering about that I'm sure is even more difficult to answer. And we know that for physicians, a difficult issue is getting patients to take the medications the way they're supposed to. And one also wonders how many people aren't getting the benefit of medicines because they're not taking them the right way.
Part of what I'm working with the American Heart Association, you can see some information about that at their site at www.americanheart.org. It is amazing in that the estimates will vary from a low of about 13% of people failing to take their medicines correctly to a high of about 90. But the average is that half of the prescriptions prescribed in this country are taken incorrectly. Let's put a real number on that. Last year, there were about 2.97 billion prescriptions filled. So if you rough it out a little bit, about 1.5 billion prescriptions were taken in the wrong way. That is just remarkably bad.
Huh.
And we need to fix that.
And when you break that down, does this mean both that people say it says there that you're supposed to take it, you know, supposed to take one 4 times a day, and that people aren't staying on the right schedule?
David, I can't tell you how many questions I get like that on my website. It's like,
yeah.
I've got a www.medicineinfo.com, and 6 or 7,000 billion times, it seems like, but probably at least 20 times a week, I'll get a question. Well, you know what? My doctor told me I'm supposed to take this medicine 3 times a day for high blood pressure, and I just can't fit in that middle pill. Is it okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is
no.
Don't do that. It's amazing when you think about that. An underdose can can be just as dangerous as an overdose. Let me give you a scenario. You get a couple prescriptions from your physician, and you want to be a good patient for a while. And what we tend to know, and from my work with the Heart Association, people tend to stay on their medicines pretty well for about that first 6 months. They've got probably a new diagnosis. They're trying to be good patients. And then that behavior tends to fatigue a little bit. And what they need is some tweaking from their doctor, from the healthcare system, to say, hey, you know, Jim Ryback, you need to take these medicines. You need to take them on an ongoing basis. And how are you doing with that? And the gap that I think we have in our healthcare system is that we have ratcheted the time down so much. If you look at the typical office visit, it's probably 6 to maybe 20 minutes, although I think the 20-minute is more like a unicorn. I'm not sure I believe that part. So there's not as much time for docs to talk about everything and get everything accomplished. And particularly the medicines themselves, well, yeah, we use a lot of those, and, yeah, how you doing? That's fine. That's good. Oh, your blood pressure isn't where it should be. And patients can be embarrassed about telling their doctor, well, you know, I have been taking that middle pill. They'll email me on the website and ask about that, but they won't say, yeah, I can't take that. Or from the point of prescribing, when they're still in the doctor's office, they can't seem to bring themselves. And please, for all of your listeners, it's okay to look your doctor in the face and tell him or her, you know what, I don't think I can take a 4-times-a-day medicine. I don't think I can take a medicine 3 times a day. The benefit with the new technology and the newer medicines is that in many cases, high blood pressure is a good example, the medicines can be taken once or twice a day, probably in combination, but you can get a better result from it. And with that failure of treatment outcome, if the blood pressure is still up, what can happen is the doctor says, oh, boy. Well, Jim Ryback, he said he was taking his medicines. I'm going to have to add on some more medicines. So you end up with that 4 or 5 or 6 prescriptions trying to keep something in control when you weren't taking them correctly. Or you increase the doses, which increases the possibility of side effects, all of which can become polypharmacy.
Well, we have several callers here. Let's see what's on minds of people who are listening, and I'll tell people again, listeners, that our guest is James Ryback. He's a pharmacist. He is the co-author of a book called The Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs 2001. It's published by HarperCollins, and it's what it sounds like. It is a listing of more than 300 drugs and information about them. So if you're taking a particular medicine, you can look at it and you can find things like what it's for, how it works, the average doses, the possibility of side effects. Is this basically the kind of information that's on the package insert?
No, it's actually much more in-depth. There's actually 45 points of information. And a key system point is that it's all written in English with the intention of making it as understandable as possible. Tells how the drug works, possible effects on sexual function, possible advantages of the drug. And a new section that I've put in all of the profiles are the typical goals and treatment measures that your doctor is going to be looking at for the particular medicine. And I think that's a place where we fail often, in that the diagnosis is made, well, you know, you have high blood pressure, here's what it is, and here's the prescription. I think it should be, you know what, Jim, you got high blood pressure. It's 160 over 100, and over the next 3 months, I want you to try to lose this much weight, and here's the prescriptions, and our goal in 3 months is to get it down to less than 140 over 89. You tend not to hear that, and I think if you give people a target to shoot at and a goal to reach, you'd be much better in getting better outcomes.
All right. Well, let's start in with someone local, line number 1 in Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have some questions about drug interactions, both for myself and for a friend. I'm an OCD sufferer and use anaphronil to control the symptoms. And at the moment, I'm also taking Celexa, with the intention of raising the Celexa and lowering the anaphronil because I've had bad side effects over the years.
Oh.
And I wonder if you can comment, and is Celexa and anaphronil something I can take in combination for a while?
Let me ask you the first question. The first question should have been looking at a healthcare system when, and I assume you have a prescription for all of these. Please
right.
tell me that part.
Oh, yes.
Okay, good, 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 good. Whew. Because one of the things I've got in this year's edition of the book is trying to address pharmacy on the Internet. And I can't tell you how many emails I get where it says, hey, you know what, you can get medicine XYZ without a prescription, just come get us. Oh, that's really scary. And I am really glad you're not doing that.
Oh, absolutely not. I don't even know how to use the Internet, frankly.
Oh, is that? Okay. The challenge with that, then, I think, is that it's not going to impact you at all. But what you're asking about is combination therapy.
Mm-hmm.
For our listeners, when you look at that, when you look at the medicines for, and when your doctor was talking to you about the Celexa, the citalopram,
right,
and prescribed it,
right.
Did he or she talk about, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to try to help with some depression that's overlaid onto the OCD?
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
And that makes good sense in a number of things. For the listeners, again, citalopram or Celexa belongs to one of those medication classes, and I hate to say this, but I'm going to. It's a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. What you hear them talked about generally as is SSRIs. And it's in the same class as Prozac or fluoxetine or Paxil and paroxetine or sertraline and Zoloft. But what tends to happen is that with these medicines in general, you get a beneficial effect versus the older medicine. Did you previously take a tricyclic antidepressant?
I've been on Afrinil ever since it became okay to take it in this country. For OCD.
So you were very...
Very long time now.
Early on.
Right. And it does have unpleasant side effects, and the doctor said that that the Celexa is a lot cleaner, it has less side effects, and that it is prescribed a lot in Europe for OCD as well. So it's, I think, both for the slight depression I experience with anafrenil and also the fact that I'd like to move from anafrenil to Celexa. And that's my goal, if the Celexa will work as good as the anafrenil does.
And the challenge, of course, for our listeners, again, one of the things that you have to be careful about and be circumspect about is that there's a huge variety of medicines for depression, and it may take a little bit to find the correct one. So in the sense of picking a reasonable dose and picking one with a better side effect profile, it sounds like that's what your doctor's done. One of the challenges, of course, with combinations of medicines, if you look at, and I have to talk about the Essential Guide. If you look at page 234 in the Essential Guide, there's actually an anafrenil profile.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that I cover a lot of, and of course HarperCollins always complains about, in that I put a lot of potential drug interactions in there.
Mm-hmm.
But what can happen, and when you look at these things, I've also gotten... so many questions about drug interactions. I've actually put a special report together on my website at the medicineinfo.com site, because you really have to be careful about this. Let's be a little bit more circumspect further. And the first thing I would tell you is that in looking at other medicines, fluoxetine, those sorts of things in general, you may see an increased effect on the anafrenil itself from that combination.
Uh-huh.
And did your doctor tell you to try to, are you starting really lower dose with the Celexa? Typically, a typical dose is 10 milligrams a day. What kind of dose
on the Celexa? Yes, we started at 10 milligrams, and I take 150 milligrams of anafrenil.
Uh-huh. And is he going to start, or he or she going to start backing that off?
Right. We're not going to back off the Celexa, but we're going to back off the anafrenil.
Right. Right, and so you've had this, you've been taking the combination for about how long now?
About 8 days.
Okay, and what have you felt?
No problem.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that what can happen, and probably just because citalopram, the Celexa, is newer,
mm-hmm.
that a little bit less is known about it. But in general, and for listeners again, what you have to look at is how does the medicine get out of the body?
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to overlap particular combinations of medicines, and if they use the same kind of pathway to get out of the body, then that's something you have to be very careful of. One thing I want to make sure that we also clarify and touch on for our listeners is the idea of herbal medicines. Have you tried herbal products in combination?
Herbal products.
St. John's Wort is probably for mild to moderate depression.
Oh, right. No, I did ask somebody if I could take St. John's Wort with an Afrinil, and the person said decidedly no.
Oh, that's very, very good.
Really?
That's an A-plus, because the question, and for our listeners again, when you're thinking about it, what I've also done in the Essential Guide is to integrate herbal medicine combinations into the text. And I've gotten a lot of flack from my colleagues about it, but because they're so widely used, mm-hmm. I think it would be incorrect for me not to do it.
So I could take St. John's Wort with an Afrinil?
No, ma'am. Please don't.
Please don't. Okay. No, no.
No. Please don't. I'm here to tell you that the possibility is that it may, in your body, mm-hmm. not cause an effect because of the variability in the St. John's Wort products. But in general, what happens is, if you look at what St. John's Wort does and where it works, and you look at where the anafrenil, or clomipramine, if you look at the generic name, works, both of them kind of work on serotonin.
Right.
And the challenge is, if you increase serotonin too much,
mm-hmm.
you can actually have something called serotonin syndrome, which is a terrible dysphoric and can end up with a coma as an end result.
Huh.
And obviously, that's not something that you want to do. The thing that I find with many people is that, it's herbal, it's natural, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would, for all of our listeners, please, before you add any herbal, nutraceutical, or other medicine to existing prescription drugs, please talk to your doctor and pharmacist
mm-hmm.
see if it's okay. That's a big challenge.
Is the Celexa as good for controlling OCD as the anafrenil?
Well, the question is, good with a lot of data, or does it have some data that will say it will work? And I think the answer is, when you look at anafrenil, it's been around longer, and mm-hmm. in that sense has more data.
Right.
And in the sense of predicting an outcome, I don't think I can do that. But what I can tell you is that, in the sense of where this can work and how it can work, mm-hmm. in the sense of what you're facing, what the challenge is, it's a reasonable step.
Uh-huh.
And I think, in that sense, obviously with what you're looking at, the time frame in how long, did your doctor talk to you about that, about when it's going to work?
No, he said it's very individualistic, and one of the reasons I want to leave anafrenil is that my husband, who does have access to the internet, mm-hmm. Was looking at up anafrenil and discovered that there's an electroconductivity problem in the heart, and they believe that is the result of years of anafrenil. And I do have a slight heart problem, and we wondered if that was from using anafrenil so long.
Interesting. There are, and again, looking at levels of possible situations, in my understanding, and obviously in profiling this for the Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs, there were case report level reports, which says very low frequency. Typically with case reports, it means that an effect has been documented to happen, but only in isolated cases of heart rhythm disturbances. So in that sense, what I would advocate that you do is to talk to your doctor about the anafrenil itself, and since you have that problem, ask your doctor if they think it would be valuable, important, and appropriate, and I do think it would be, to go ahead and report this as, gee, here's a question, and of course, for what I typically am faced with over the course of a day, is it correlation, meaning you have a person taking the medicine who has a heart rhythm disturbance,
mm-hmm.
or is it causation? And that's something that the FDA tends to try to sort out. And as I was talking earlier with David, adverse reactions tend to be underreported, And this might be an opportunity for you to try to address that.
In anaphrenil, is there also muscle weakness?
Do you mean can that happen as a possibility?
With anaphrenil.
When you look at that, more people would say you could have, you mean like a tremorous sort of feeling?
Simply feet that feel like lead, especially going up and down stairs.
Interesting. I'm not aware of that as a prevalent thing. There have been some muscle cramping kinds of reports. So in the sense of can that have a possible effect on the muscles, I think the intelligent answer would be yes. And again, that's something that if you look at the dose-related aspect, if you're going to be taking off or lowering the dose of anaphrenil,
right,
and then continuing with the citalopram or Celexa, and then looking at possible adverse effects there, you don't have that sort of situation that I'm aware of. So overall, looking at all of that, this looks like a very interesting transition. And, of course, what we want to see over time and what you want to see over time is how that controls the OCD. And it's an interesting and, I think, valuable choice.
Yeah, I need to get in here, and I hope the caller will forgive me.
But
we've already used up almost half our time, and I have a number of other callers that I want to get onto, and I hope
Thank
the caller will forgive
so
me.
Thank you so much.
Very good. We're talking this morning in this part of Focus 580 with Dr. James Rabecki. He's a pharmacist. He is also assistant professor at University of Maryland. He's one of the authors, along with James Long, of The Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs 2001, which is a reference and resource for anyone taking prescription medication. If you're interested in finding out more about the medicines that you're taking, what they're for, and also things like possible side effects, possible drug interactions, it's a great resource to look at. We have several other people. In fact, the lines are full, so
Go ahead.
No, that's fine. I mean, I think on this program, one of the things we appreciate and encourage is thorough answers to questions. The downside is that sometimes it can take a long time. Anyway, we'll get as many people in, and then perhaps we'll just have to say that given this kind of interest, we'll have to have you back on the show at a future date if you're interested.
Love.
All right, very
I
good. Well, let's go on here to another Urbana person. This is line number two.
Okay.
Yes, hello.
Yes, glucosamine has been prescribed for me, but without chondroitin, but it's rather difficult to find that on the shelf. Nearly all the glucosamine has chondroitin with it. What does chondroitin do?
Now, that's an interesting point. And the question is, and for our listeners, glucosamine has some very interesting data. And I say data because there are actually starting to be some very good studies about this for osteoarthritis. And the question is, that's the weight-bearing as we get older. I have a knee now due to a marathon that's starting to do that, and that's one of the supplements that I actually take, and I've gotten a very good result for it. The question of glucosamine plus chondroitin, the thinking was, well, if we put in some more building blocks for cartilage, can this have an effect? And the most recent data that I've seen advocates taking the glucosamine alone. There's also a very interesting benefit that came up, although it was in an animal study, that it appears that glucosamine may also have an effect on the blood vessels. So you're getting a couple benefits from that. The other thing that happens is that if you look at glucosamine with chondroitin, in general for most products, it tends to be more expensive than glucosamine alone. So what I would suggest is that continue your search and try to get the glucosamine alone, because there's good data for that.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you for the call. And we will go on. Our next person is in Bloomington, Illinois, line four.
Good morning.
Yes.
I am a healthcare...
Hello?
Yes?
Yes. I am the healthcare... person that has to keep track of my sisters.
Oh, so you're actually a caregiver for someone else. That's
No, I'm not, but
okay.
I have the power of attorney for her health care.
Oh, okay.
For to pay her bills. And on the she's in a nursing home. And There's something on the drug bill that I'm wondering what it is.
Okay.
Cyanocobalamin, and it's apparently 1,000 micrograms per milliliter.
So can you
what
that?
Is that, and what's it for?
Can you spell that for me? I couldn't quite.
C-Y-A-N-O-C-O-B-A-L-A-M-I-N.
Okay, I'm with you completely now. What that is vitamin B12. And what can happen, that's actually an intrinsic factor, and let me simplify that a little bit further. What they're doing with that, and it typically is 1,000 micrograms, and I actually have an aunt in a nursing home, and I do some nursing home and a lot of hospital consulting. What they're trying to do is to make sure she may have had an anemia at one point, and in this case, her...
She has had pernicious anemia.
There you go. That is a classic treatment for pernicious anemia. For our viewers, what pernicious anemia is that as we age, as we get a little bit older, we're not as able to absorb things, and the acidity and the characteristics of our stomach change. And what can happen is this cyanocobalamin, which is actually vitamin B12, can not get into your body as well. The result is that your body doesn't have one of the fundamental building blocks that it needs to make red blood cells, of course, which carry oxygen, to make those red blood cells appropriately. And so what tends to happen is you get these huge red blood cells that don't work very well. They're actually called macrocytes, macro for large, cyte for cell. And what they're trying to do with this treatment, with this vitamin B12, is to get those red blood cells to the appropriate level, the right number, and also the right size.
Would that be an injection then?
Yes, absolutely.
I see. All right. Thank you very much.
You're very
welcome. All right, thank you. And we'll go now next to Bloomington, Indiana, line number three.
Hi. I didn't hear the very beginning of the program. Have you discussed the effect of diurnal body rhythms on the effect of drugs?
That's an interesting point. No, we haven't.
Well, is it true that if a drug is released into your system when your body rhythm is at one place, it might have a somewhat different effect than if the same drug released at a different phase of your body rhythm?
The question with that, and for most people and for our listeners, this is something that can happen at research centers. For most people, the variation in response with body rhythms is not going to be, and the nerdy term is clinically significant. You won't see a huge difference in effect.
I see.
When that happens. One of the things that does happen, let me give you a big example here, and it's not so much a rhythm change, but it's actually what your body does. I have a constellation of genes that I unfortunately got from my parents, and of course we can't choose our parents, and what I'll be looking at probably in another 5 or 10 years is a high cholesterol situation that I'm going to take care of and be proactive about. But what God decided to do was say, you know what? We're going to use cholesterol and have your liver make cholesterol. We're going to make it at night. So when you look at that kind of shift, and for any of the viewers taking a statin or an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor to lower cholesterol, typically they're taken at night because that's when your body tends to make the most cholesterol. And it's marrying the drug level to the biggest effect that you want to have on the body. That's the biggest example I'm aware of. The other one is obviously cortisol and those sorts of things. But beyond that, I'm not aware of a real clinical significance.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to know. And thank you very much.
You're
all
so
right.
Welcome.
Let's go back to Urbana, line one. Hello.
Yeah, to say something positive about an HMO, my HMO was kind enough to get me some Sporinox.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I was wondering if...
An antifungal.
Right. And I was wondering if there's anything I should look out for. I haven't started it yet.
I'm sorry, you haven't heard the...
No, I haven't started it up yet.
Oh, okay. Are you taking other medicines?
Yeah, Lipitor and Glucophage.
Okay, Lipitor and Glucophage. One of the questions, and going back to the drug interaction section that I put... in the Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs and put into the website at the medicineinfo.com site is the prevalence of drug interactions. And when you look at particular medicines that can have drug interactions, you're taking one of the ones that you have to watch, okay? That's the first thing. It doesn't mean it's a bad medicine. It means that it can have an effect on liver enzymes, and it's something that, have you taken that to get it filled yet? That's an interesting question.
I'm sorry?
Have you taken the itraconazole? Itraconazole is the generic name. Sporinox is the brand name.
Oh, okay.
And have you taken that to get it filled yet?
Yes.
Okay, and did it come up with a drug interaction?
No, I don't. I asked the pharmacist if there's anything I should look out for. He basically said I should have my doctor check my liver enzymes periodically, but that's really it.
Okay. The question with this, and when you look at this with other medications, itraconazole is one of those that can have an inhibitory effect on a very widely used, and for our listeners, I'll hit that again, a little complicated, but a widely used liver enzyme, cytochrome P450-3A4. And the reason that can be important is that if you're taking some other medicines with this class, you have to be a little careful about that. And probably the bigger ones to be concerned about in the same class with the ones you're taking, Lipitor is atorvastatin. That's in the class of HMG-CoA reductase inhibitors for actually lowering cholesterol. And I would call the pharmacist back and say, you know, take a look at this, and is there a possible interaction with the Lipitor and the itraconazole that you just added on board?
And your opinion is that there might be or that there is?
Well, the question is, and when you look at levels of what you're taking, how much Lipitor are you taking?
I believe it's 10 milligrams per day.
Okay. So you're actually in the smaller dose category. And the glucophage is metformin itself. Let's do this. I think one of the things we need to think about is how long are you going to be taking the antifungal, the itraconazole?
For 3 months to start. They've got a pulse program where you take it for a week and then you're off for 3 weeks, and you take it for a week and you're off for 3 weeks. So I'm going to be doing that for 3 months, apparently.
Okay. That may have been part of where that came from. In the sense of if it was going to be an ongoing, and for the listeners again, some of the antifungals taken all of the time can have an effect with the medicines themselves. And the concern that I have with this, and this is something you need to talk to your doctor and pharmacist about, for atorvastatin itself, which is the Lipitor, and it may be because of the way your medicine is going to be used, in general, with fluconazole or diflucan, which is another antifungal, ketoconazole or nizoral, which is another antifungal, or itraconazole or Sporinox, which is the one you're going to be taking, they can actually affect the liver enzymes in the sense of changing the way the Lipitor or atorvastatin may be metabolized.
Mm.
And it may not get out of your body as well.
Mm.
And so the question is to give your doctor a call, give your pharmacist a call and say, gee, is there a possibility that this could change the elimination of the Lipitor or atorvastatin, and does that mean the dose should be changed? Or is there thinking that because of the way you're going to pulse dose it, and that's a technique where, again, as you already outlined, you're not going to be taking it in an ongoing basis. They may be thinking, well, this may not have that large an effect on the statin dose with the way you're going to be dosing it. But it's something you need, I think, to ask another question about.
Okay.
Yep, and for our listeners, again, there are situations where there are things that always should not be combined, and there are other situations where, yes, it may increase blood levels a little bit, but is it clinically significant or not? And of course, that's the question.
Thanks.
All right, thank you. I guess that one quick thing that this points out is often the advice is given if you should go to one place to get all your prescriptions filled.
Oh, that is a home run.
Because then, you know, they'll keep track of everything, and then theoretically, if you know, they should look at, if you come in with a new thing, they should look at what you're already taking and say, hey, wait a minute, maybe this is not.
The thing that I see a lot is that when you look at what happens with people shopping around to pharmacies, you may get a better price, but if you don't give a complete medication history to every pharmacy, mm-hmm. they may not have all the other medicines you're taking. And, of course, then you can have a problem from that.
So at the very least, though, if you're not going to do that, then if you are taking other medicines, you should tell the person who's filling, tell the pharmacist, look, here's this new thing. I am already on these other things. Is there some, do you see any possible problem?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
We've about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580.
Oh, my gosh, time flies.
It really always does. It always does. Let's go to Crete for another caller here. Line two. Hello.
Yes, I was wondering if there could be a substitute for the two drugs I'm taking that seem to have some problem with my impotence. One is Proscar 5-MG for BPH, and I take that once a day. And the other drug is Tenormin 25-MG. I take it twice a day for ventricular ectopy. They both have warning signs regarding impotence. I wondered if you could think of any substitutes for the Proscar or Tenorm that might have less effect on the issue of ED.
Okay, now let's talk about this again. This is a very challenging question, and what I've done in the essential guide is to integrate possible effects on sexual function into all of the profiles, because it's amazing how many people start a medicine and that point is somehow left out, and yet later on they're coming up with a problem. Have you actually had a problem with this combination?
Yes.
Okay. The first question is, for finasteride or Proscar for our listeners, this is something where people with prostate problems and having urinary outflow problems is very widely prescribed and very widely used. And when you look at that, the other corollary to that is there's also another one that's used for hair loss, which is called Propecia, which is the same drug in a lower dose. Have you actually had a benefit from that in the sense of...
Yes, my BPH is way down.
Okay, and has your hair actually stayed the same or
no,
a little bit
fine.
Better?
My hair's fine. It's not that part of the body I'm concerned about.
Okay, no, I understand. I understand, and certainly in that sense, this is something we need to talk about. But in the sense of, for our listeners again, For most patients, the a decreased libido or a decreased volume of ejaculate is infrequent. But the other question with this particular medicine, with the finasteride or the Proscar, is that adverse sexual effects may resolve in about 60% of patients who continue the medicine. So that's the first question for you is, has this gone on for a long time or did you just start it? And if you just started it, you may see these effects. Some medicines have adverse effects, and they stay with you, and it's something that, gee, you need to switch medicines. Other medicines may not have the effect over time or have the effect decrease. So let's answer that question first.
It has increased, but I think the Tenorm is also added to it.
Which one came first?
I took the Proscar 3 or 4 or 5 years before I took the Tenorm.
Oh, okay, so you've been on it for a long time. So for our listeners, again, the caveat here is that this is a significant amount of time, so probably this adverse effects, which certainly is documented with this medicine, probably will not resolve. So the question then becomes changing the medicine. May I ask again what the Tenorm is being taken for?
Ventricular ectopy.
Okay. And for our listeners, what that is basically an abnormal heart rhythm. And the question is, looking at beta blockers, which is the general class to which this belongs, for heart rhythm changes, that again is a widely used prescription. Unfortunately, what you have is an overlap of side effects. So the first question becomes, looking at the finasteride or Proscar itself, you've gotten a benefit from that, so you've got something that you really want to try to keep or stay on board. Unfortunately, with that side effect, what I'm hearing is that you really want to have a change for that, don't you?
Yeah, I like the substitute. There must be something.
Yep, and the question is, this is an interesting thing, in the sense of prescription medicines, there isn't a good replacement for that.
How about salt palmetto?
And in the sense of herbal medicines, I love it when callers read my mind, salt palmetto in a standardized dose, and this is something I actually have on that website at medicineinfo.com, I've done a profile of the top five herbal medicines where they have science. And salt palmetto is one of those that has science. Now, let me give you some caveats, though. For any listener, obviously you can get this without a prescription, but one of the things you need to do is to certainly talk to your doctor about this possibility. And certainly a prostate screening is wholly appropriate. Some of the salt palmetto packages actually have labeling on it that says have an appropriate prostate exam, plus or minus, and I would say plus, a PSA, a prostate-specific test, before you would start that.
I always do.
That's excellent, but I want to make sure for our broader listeners, because I think we have a pretty big reach here, that everybody understands that, because what I find is that people tend to think, well, it's herbal, it's natural, it's not going to have any interactions, and it doesn't have the same sort of follow-ups required for prescription drugs. Well, this one certainly does. For saw palmetto, though, there have been a number of clinical trials that showed a very good effect. And actually, there are three comparative trials to Proscar, the one you're taking. And the key component here is looking at an 85 to 95% fatty acid ester and sterol combination in the product itself. So that's kind of like the active ingredient for what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And probably typical, and again, I would advocate you work in concert with your doctor for that. Typical dose is about 300 milligrams a day after prostate screening,
mm-hmm.
and it typically will start to work about 30 to 60 days after you start taking it. And what happens is that with salt palmetto, the fatty acids, which are the active ingredient of that salt palmetto, work to inhibit the 5-alpha reductase, which is a similar kind of mechanism to what the prescription drug Proscar does. So that might be a reasonable switch, but the key caveat here is that I really want you to talk to your doctor about this.
Is there a substitute for Tenorm?
Now, the question with that, that's a much more complicated question. Are there other beta blockers? Yes. And what I would ask you to do there is to go back to your doctor and say, gee, in general, because you know a beta blocker is a reasonable approach to what you're saying your heart rhythm problem is, okay? That's the first thing. The second thing, though, is, and what I think the real question is there a beta blocker, and this is exactly how you should frame it to your doctor, that has a smaller percent adverse effect on sexual function versus the one I'm taking, okay?
Right.
And actually what you have to do is look at a comparison of all the beta blockers, and there's a ton of beta blockers. If we had another half an hour, we could sit down and take a look at it, take a look at the rest of what you're doing and what he or she is trying to treat, and make sure we're not cheating you by switching you to something that's going to have the beta blocker benefit on your heart rate but still have the same adverse effect in sexual function. But there are variations within that same family of beta blockers, and what you want to do is have somebody look at an objective table of all the beta blockers and say which one has the lowest possibility of causing that effect, which will still give you the benefit on your heart. And that's the way to approach it.
Thank you.
All right, we'll try to get one more here. Eureka, line 4. Hello.
Hello. I have a very short question. Some foods have beneficial medical effect, like oatmeal and soy foods have some medical effect. And
yes, they do.
Do you recognize the term, what are phytochemicals?
Phytochemicals are an interesting gamish of things. Typically, the way you see these spoken about are phytoestrogens. And what you're talking about there is soy protein or the equivalent again. And what you're doing is getting an estrogen-like compound from a plant. And what's been found, this is pretty widely recognized in natural medicines and women's health, that about 30 grams or so of soy protein or the equivalent daily can help with menopausal symptoms. So you can get a benefit that's like an estrogen actually from a plant.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
All right, thank you. Well, we're getting to the point here. We have maybe a couple minutes, 2-3 minutes left. There's lots and lots of things I guess we could talk about. One thing I'm curious about, and I did want to ask you about, it seems that within the last couple of years, we've seen a very significant change in the way that prescription medicines are marketed. It used to be that they were marketed exclusively to the doctors, and that made sense because they're the ones that write the prescriptions.
Right.
But more and more here, we've seen an explosion of marketing aimed at consumers. The idea being then the patients will go to their doctors and say, I want you to give me this medicine. And I wonder whether you think that's either good, bad, or indifferent.
Well, I think creating awareness is always good. Creating awareness where someone says, geez, I saw this on television, I have to have this medicine, that isn't the way medicines work, and that is actually a disservice. But I know a lot of docs are faced with that, where Mrs. Smith comes in and says, hey, I saw this on television and wrote down the name, I want it. The reality is that just like information for patients, just like other aspects of life, and that AmericanHeart.org site, there's a new program called One of a Kind where there's individualized information. I think the key point is that therapy needs to be individualized. And because you've seen a medicine on television, it may have great data, it may have perfect effects on a population to which you don't belong, and in an area where you really don't need that medicine. So there are a whole bunch of caveats in making a decision to use a medicine, and finding the best one doesn't mean that you saw it on television. It means that all of the risk factors, how well your kidneys work, how well your liver works, what the goals of treatment are, what the time frame to achieve the goals of treatment are, all have to be brought together to say, okay, of the available medicines, which one of these should I use for Jim Rybacki based on all of his factors? Not, he came into my office and saw it on TV.
Well, we're pretty much going to have to stop here. Obviously,
okay. There
are people who have lots of questions and don't know who to ask them of, or maybe they don't have time with their doctors or don't want to burden the pharmacist. So one place people can go to get some more information is the book we've mentioned, The Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs 2001 by James Rybacki and James Long. Also, Dr. Rybacki has a website, which is www.medicineinfo.com. So that's a possibility. And maybe we'll just have to have you back on the show and do this again in a few months and see how we do then.
I would love to come back. There are so many issues, and looking at everything from high blood pressure to cardiovascular disease to diabetes that we didn't even talk about to preventing stroke to, and my word, these medicines can make a great difference, making sure that, please, for all of your listeners, become a partner in your health care. Go to a bookstore if you can, buy the Essential Guide, but take a look and learn about your medicines like you would learn about a member of your family that you really want to help, because that's how you get the best results from your medicines. Don't let the cure become the disease.
All right. Well, again, thanks very much, James Rybacki. He is the co-author of The Essential Guide to Prescription Drugs 2001, published by HarperCollins. It's now out, available in paperback.